Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Hope you're going to hang out for a while. Monkey Man was scolding Congress again today for not supporting the troops and for trying to spend too much money on things like, stuff the American people really don't want. Health care for poor kids and endless bloodshed in Iraq. So we have a smattering, and only a smattering, of moron sounds on the program tonight. Stick around. It'll just warm the cockles of your heart. What are cockles, Kathy? Can you look that up before the program's over? What does that mean, cockles of one's heart?
I don't know, but I don't want to say it in front of Molly.
Okay. The latest Dick Cheney story. This guy really dances to his own drummer, doesn't he? Whether that drummer is beating on a drum made of human skin, or if the drummer is whatever. You know, Cheney will work together with the forces of darkness in this country to make sure that gay folk are not allowed to get serious with one another, and certainly not have babies together until it's his daughter who decides to have a baby with her lesbian partner. And then all of a sudden, we don't talk about private businesses. We're going to love this grandchild like we love our other. Yeah, okay, Dick. We understand, Dick. Well, today was another one of those, Cheney doesn't give a damn. He went to a place called the Clove Valley Rod and Gun Club in Dutchess County, New York. Rod and Gun Club. Oh, well. In Dutchess County, New York. And there was a New York Daily News photographer there who snapped a picture of hanging inside a garage on the Hunt Club property is a the Stars and Bars. The Cross of St. Andrew? The Confederate battle flag. There it was. Now, some people look at that Confederate battle flag much like, normal thinking people look at the Nazi flag as something that represents murder, death, repression, racism, hatred. And yeah, sure enough, the photo was shown to the Reverend Al Sharpton, who issued a statement demanding that Cheney, quote, leave immediately, denounce the club, and apologize for going to a club that represents lynching, hate, and murder of black people, end quote. Cheney, so I've heard, invited Sharpton to come hunting with me sometime. Boy. It's incredible, isn't it, Kent? What would happen if Cheney went to a hunt club where an enterprising photographer got a picture of a swastika flag inside a garage on the property? How long before the Anti-Defamation League would be on every single network television outlet in America denouncing, demanding? How long would it take Dana Too Much Cappuccino Perino to step out in front? How long would it take for Bush or Cheney to comment on the Nazi flag after it was brought to the attention of Jewish leaders in this country? How long would it take? Now, I'm not about to start comparing Holocausts here. But the best estimates of how many African slaves who died in the Middle Crossing over a period of about what? You tell me, a century and a half. What are the numbers? 50 million? 60? 70? Why is it? This is something I cannot get through my skull. I can't. And I've lived here in the South almost 40 years. Why is it that an emblem of lynching, murder, death, repression, insurrection, killing, hatred, and racism, that would be the Confederate battle flag? is seen as something that represents, as the rednecks down here like to say, well, that's part of our heritage. Has nothing to do with the has nothing to do with our black brothers. It has to do with our heritage. What would happen? What happened when, what was his name, Jörg Haider? Was he running for, what, Prime Minister of Austria? Or he was in the parliament? Don't send me emails, I really don't care. But you remember the story. It was through a maze you could trace back that this guy was aligned with, if I'm remembering the story right, a pro-Nazi party. What about the guy who was Secretary General of the United Nations? Turned out that he was in the SS. I mean, it just goes on and on. There is a convulsion, an absolute paroxysm of loathing and screaming and outrage when it is discovered that somebody has a Nazi flag or somebody, and well, it should be. But why, when it's a Confederate emblem that represents so much pain and suffering to tens of millions of people who were dragged to this country in chains or thrown overboard halfway across because there was no room in the boat? Why is that seen as something, oh, hey, look, I got me a Confederate T-shirt on, son of a bitch. What do you think, huh? I'm a rebel. Yee-haw! So Al Sharpton wages his lonely scream. But I can imagine Abraham Foxman of the Anti-Defamation League coming out and holding a news conference. And I can see every presidential contender on the Democratic side gathering behind him, denouncing the Nazi flag. But it wasn't a Nazi flag. And Al Sharpton, obviously, is not Abraham Foxman. And black folk in America, obviously, are not as well represented in the circles of people who will raise these issues as the Jews are. Now, don't misunderstand what I'm saying here. Both emblems of hatred should be denounced immediately. There should be screaming bloody murder. But it doesn't happen when it's the cross of St. Andrew, does it? Oh, well, what the hell. Just thought I'd toss that out. You can toss it back in if you like. A new Zogby poll. Person who sent this to me in the subject line wrote, "Why I want to get the hell out of here." It says the majority of likely voters, 52%, would support a U.S. military strike to prevent Iran from building a nuclear weapon. That's 52% of Americans. And 53% believe it is likely that the U.S. will be involved in a military strike against Iran before the next presidential election. That's according to a new Zogby America telephone poll. The survey results come at a time of increasing U.S. scrutiny of Iran. According to reports from the Associated Press earlier this month, Condoleezza Rice accused Iran of lying about the aim of its nuclear program, and Dick Cheney has raised the prospect of serious consequences if the U.S. were to discover Iran was attempting to develop a nuclear weapon. 52% of likely voters would support a military strike against Iran. What'd the subject line say? Why I want to get the hell out of here.
I believe that people who are going to commit crime shouldn't have guns.
Oh, 21 past the hour. You know, we let our first anniversary just slide right by yesterday. Did you know that, Kathy? 1 year with Nova M Radio. I think it was yesterday. A couple of people sent me emails about it. I just forgot to mention it. So to the folks who did send in a, hey, way to go, thank you. I appreciate it.
Do we get paid now?
My life expectancy on any radio station or radio network I've ever worked at is about 2 years before the bosses come out of the ether and say, get rid of this guy. So I'm hoping that's not the case with Shelley and Anita Drobny and Nova M Radio. If it is, well, at least we have another year to go, right?
Molly will be in preschool then.
Yes, she will. She's in preschool now.
Well, four, you know, 4PK officially.
We mentioned this last night. Rumsfeld fled France yesterday, yes?
And she'd also be old enough to work for the Gap,
that's
apparently.
True. Yeah, she is almost old enough to...
In India.
I do have that on the menu for tonight. But I wanted to talk about Rumsfeld here first. He hoisted up his pants and ran yesterday. I don't know why. When I read this first sentence, former U.S. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld fled France yesterday, fearing arrest over charges of, quote, ordering and authorizing, end quote, torture of detainees, blah, 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 blah. When I saw that, read that first part, it just reminds me of all the cartoons you see about, you know, some guy who's in an outhouse and it gets knocked over, and there he goes running across a cornfield with his pants down around his ankles. For some reason, that's the image I got of Rumsfeld, running across the field with his bony ass sticking out and holding up his drawers. But it's a little more serious than that. He fled France, ran like the chicken hawk that he is. U.S. Embassy officials, it says here, whisked Rumsfeld away from a breakfast meeting in Paris organized by the Foreign Policy magazine after human rights groups filed a criminal complaint against him. The man who, I love what it says here, the man who spearheaded President George W. Bush's war on terror for 6 years. Under international law, authorities in France are obliged to open an investigation when a complaint is made while the alleged torturer is on French soil. Wow, don't you wish we had a law like that? Jesus Christ, half of Bush's cabinet would be a target of an investigation. But I like that line. Under international law, authorities in France are obliged. They don't have any choice. It's sort of like our Constitution makes it an obligation to impeach these bastards because of what they've done. But standing in the way is Nancy Pelosi. Oh, well. According to activists in France who greeted Rumsfeld at the breakfast meeting venue shouting murderer and war criminal. Now, think about that for a second, huh? If that were in the United States, preceding Rumsfeld into the meeting would have been black-clad, fully armored, Blackwater paramilitary stormtroopers, A. B. The entire area for 2 square miles around Rumsfeld's meeting in downtown Detroit or Houston or Atlanta would have been cleared of all human life. They just, in France, they just don't get it, do they, huh? They still believe in that liberty, equality, fraternity nonsense that led them all to the French Revolution. And we know what happened after the French Revolution, don't we, huh? They called it the terror. Anyway, I digress. Rumsfeld was greeted with activists shouting murder and war criminal. U.S. Embassy officials remained tight-lipped. Picture that, huh? Does that remind you of your aunt, your favorite aunt, who would just pinch those lips together when you, or your grandmother did? U.S. Embassy officials remained tight-lipped about the former defense secretary's whereabouts, citing security reasons. Anti-torture protesters in France believe that the defense secretary fled over the open border to Deutschland, to Germany, where a war crimes case against Rumsfeld was dismissed by a federal court. But activists point out that under the Schengen Agreement that ended border checkpoints across a large part of the European Union, French law enforcement agents are allowed to cross the border into Germany in pursuit of a fleeing fugitive. Ha-ha! One of the activists said, quote, Rumsfeld must be feeling how Saddam Hussein felt when U.S. forces were hunting him down. Rumsfeld may never end up being hanged like his old friend, but he must learn that in the civilized world, war crime doesn't pay. I hope they get him. Oh, my God, I wish they could put their hands on him. And going back a generation, get this old bastard Henry Kissinger before he steps off this mortal coil, too. There are so many of these people, Americans, who need to stand in the dock of justice and listen to the crimes against them in front of a war crimes tribunal and give them the best attorneys the U.S. taxpayer can afford and let justice be served. Right?
He lies and he lies and he lies. He just lies and he lies and he lies and he lies. He can lie any time. He can lie any place. He crosses his fingers and keeps a straight face. He lies and he lies and he lies. Too many believe him. They're
mention yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
Très bien. Enchanté. Run, Rummy, run. How do you say run in French? You don't know? Don't email me! All right, let's get to the Chuckle Nuts version or section of the program here very quickly. It wasn't a press conference, really. It was more like the leader speaks, the dear leader speaks. And, it was Chuckle Nuts urging Congress to pass all of his fascist appropriations bills and stop dicking around. Stop with all the nonsense about starving children and unemployed workers and children without health care. Come on, get on the stick. So Congress got another harsh finger-wagging from Mensa Man on the Congress's hesitation in passing through all this legislation he wants before he leaves for a nice, relaxing vacation at Prairie Chapel. Today, the moron took the microphone in front of a bunch of rich, white Republican congressmen to threaten the Senate. Threaten the Senate that if they passed a revised version of the S-CHIP bill, I'll veto it again. I'll veto it again and again. Don't send me it. I'll veto it. Because, you know, we can't spend money on children when there's still all that killing to do in Iraq.
Congress is not getting its work done. We're near the end of the year, and there really isn't much to show for it. The House of Representatives has wasted valuable time on a constant stream of investigations.
No kidding!
And the Senate has wasted valuable time on an endless series of failed votes to pull our troops out of Iraq.
And that ain't gonna happen!
Despite knowing it does not have a chance of becoming law, the Senate will now take up the second S-CHIP bill the House passed last week.
Here they come! Get him! Get him!
I believe the Senate is wasting valuable time.
You do?
This bill remarkably manages to spend more money over 5 years than the first bill did.
God knows we can't have that. We can't have that. Can't spend money on uninsured children. Good God, what do these senators think? What are they using for brains? The House of Representatives has wasted valuable time on a constant stream of investigations. Let me tell you something, Georgie Porgy. If this Congress did what it should be doing, your ass would be hiring more attorneys than Tom DeLay did, because you would be the subject of an impeachment hearing in the House Judiciary Committee even as we speak. So don't complain, George. And if the House really and the Senate really felt like fulfilling its duties under the Constitution, these investigations your ass is whining about would double, triple. George, you've been running a criminal enterprise. You know it. Cheney knows it. The rest of the world knows it. The only people who don't know it live here. Oh, and the Senate has wasted valuable time on an endless series of failed votes to pull our troops out of Iraq. Gee, why are they doing that? Jessica's American people want us out of there, and so the Rockies. I'm a decider. I don't care about American people or the Iraqis. My God. Next, the decider chastises Congress for, wait for it, their increased spending. How about that? This from the man who has created an enormous and equally useless Department of Homeland Security and spends billions of taxpayer dollars to bring about death and destruction on a nation that posed no threat to us. Yada, 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 yada. Huge tax breaks to the wealthiest American citizens and corporations. And handing out pockets full of change to Katrina victims and poor kids and anything else that has to do with decency and justice and an ethical center. Oh, yeah. But Congress is irresponsible with our money. Right.
They have not been able to send a single annual appropriations bill to my desk. And that's the worst record for a Congress in 20 years. One of the important responsibilities of the Congress is to pass appropriations bills.
Oh, okay.
Yet the leadership that's on the Hill now cannot get that job done. They've also passed an endless series of tax increases.
Oh, yeah? When?
You know, they proposed tax increases in the farm bill, the energy bill, the small business bill, and, of course, the S-CHIP bill.
Oh, yeah, on cigarettes. That's right.
They haven't seen a bill they could not solve without shoving a tax hike into it.
They
believe in raising taxes.
Well, you dumbass, how else is government paid for anything? Passing a hat? They passed an endless series of tax increases. Name one. Oh, that's right. And then he qualifies it. You know, they proposed tax increases in the farm bill, the energy bill, blah, 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 the small business bill, the S-CHIP bill. No, they didn't, chuckle nuts. That's what somebody told you to go out and say. And what, Kathy? Was there no press there to say to him, name one in the endless series of tax increases that they passed? One! The Democrats can't pass anything, and the Republicans gave you a 7-year free pass. What the hell are you talking about? Is that not unconstitutional, Kathy? Can he stand out there and lie like that? And a tax increase on the S-CHIP bill? Yeah, that's right. Cigarettes. Ugh. They haven't seen a bill, he says, they could not solve without shoving a tax hike into it. In other words, they believe in raising taxes. Or maybe, chuckle nuts, they have a moral center and a human conscience and a sense of ethical behavior and believe that our taxpayer money should be spent on things that we taxpayers support and condone, not on your goddamn war, not on your murderous occupation, not on your arrogance, not on your shoveling billions to your cronies and your friends. You make me sick. Just sick. It's George Bush, right? God. Last one from the commander in chimp. Once again, more unintended irony from this idiot about supporting our troops. The very troops he sends to their death and dismemberment every single day.
There are now reports that congressional leaders may be considering combining the Veterans and Department of Defense appropriations bills and then add a bloated labor, health, and education spending bill to both of them. It's hard to imagine a more cynical political strategy than trying to hold hostage funding for our troops in combat.
Oh, God.
And our wounded warriors.
Oh, God.
In order to extract $11 billion in additional social spending.
Oh, my God!
I again ask Congress to send me a clean veterans funding bill that we have already agreed to by Veterans Day. So we can keep America's promise to those who have defended our freedom and are recovering from injury.
That you caused!
I again urge them to pass a clean defense appropriations bill and a war supplemental bill to fund our troops in combat.
Oh, my God.
I know some on the Democrat side didn't agree with my decision to send troops in, but it seems like we ought to be able to agree that we're going to support our troops who are in harm's way.
You evil, nasty son of a bitch. You really are. You are the bottom of the barrel, George. What do you say? It's hard to imagine a more cynical political strategy than trying to hold hostage funding for our troops in combat and our wounded warriors in order to extract $11 billion additional social spending? Do you understand what you're saying with that sentence? No, of course you don't. I'll tell you what, George, let's just get them the hell out of harm's way and put them into that you put them into. And therefore, save their lives and save their arms and legs and no brain injuries and all the children that you see on television who have lost their fathers, you know, 9 and 10 year olds who are standing there sobbing their eyes out because it's like Thanksgiving and Christmas and you, you filthy bastard, have sent their fathers to their deaths. Someday, George, a tribunal someplace is going to put you in the dock.
Jesus would bomb the Afghans on some kind of vengeful whim. Maybe Jesus would drive an M1 tank and he would shoot Saddam. Who would Jesus?
Now, the man conservatives love to hate, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. And then in light of Bush on TV this morning, Alex in New York City sent the following. Mike, the majority of your listeners would have to admit that Bush is a madman. The problem is that he not only chided Congress during his statement today, but he issued an ultimatum to Congress. Either you follow and pass bills without questioning my judgment and give me what I want, or at the earliest opportunity, I will take action as predicted, as predicated by my June-July executive order, which gives the executive office the ability to shut down this country on an emergency basis. And then you can face the consequences. Good luck, truth seekers. Judgment Day is fast approaching. Alex in New York. Well, yeah, it probably is. Oh, God. I went in for my physical today that I do periodically. And my doctor, bless his heart, I have a male and a female doctor. This time it was the guy. And he had told me when I was in there, a couple of weeks ago getting a pneumonia shot and a flu shot. And he said, when you come back in a couple of weeks for your checkup, let's do an EKG. And, you know, I said, why? do you know something I don't? Why? He said, no, it's just routine. So I went in there today, and on the drive into my doctor's office, I was thinking, oh, man, EKG. Well, it's no big deal, you know. It's just all it does is check your rhythm, you know. So on the way in, I'm thinking, yeah, but don't turn on the radio. You know, we have Sirius satellite radio in the truck. And you know, I thought, don't turn on the radio because, you know, I've got it set on CNN. If you turn it on, you're going to hear Bush. And by the time you get there and lay down on the thingy for your EKG, it's going to just screw everything up. Don't do it. So I didn't. So I just wrote in. And anyway, to make a long story short, for those of you who worry about whether I'm going to have a heart attack or a stroke on this program, no, everything, he came in about, you know how long it takes to do an EKG? It takes longer to put those sensors on you. They put about 8 sensors on you. And then the technician goes, okay, boom, beep, boop, beep, boop. Okay, done. That's it. And he came in a couple of minutes later and said, perfect. So, that's certainly good news. So, to me, to me it's good news. But anyway, for the folks who genuinely worry I'm going to have a heart attack, no, I'm not. I might get shot doing something I shouldn't do, or something I should do. There's fair.org, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. Jeff Cohen, I don't know if Jeff is still connected with FAIR or not. He may have moved on. I remember when FAIR first came into being, and Jeff Cohen, Kathy, that's right around the time you and I met, because I was working at that radio station where I had to buy the time, and I had Jeff on. I think we gave him the first interview as the head of FAIR. But anyway, their website, fair.org, has a piece here about National Public Radio giving credibility to torture. What the website talks about is NPR, National Public Radio's Morning Edition. When was it? Last Friday? Anyway, their Iraq correspondent, Ann Garrels, she had a report based around the accounts of 3 men who were being held prisoner by the Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr's militia. Now, these 3 men were supposedly, according to Ann Garrels, according to the piece on NPR, supposedly were renegade members of Mr. Sadr's militia who said, quote, they were trained in roadside bombs and car bombings in Iran to attack Americans and sow suspicion and violence between Shiites and Sunnis, end quote. Now, that's what Ann Garrels reported. They said, these 3 men, that they were trained in roadside bombing and car bombings in Iran to attack Americans and sow suspicion and violence between Shiites and Sunnis. Now, the details of what the prisoner said made up much of Garrels' report, despite her noting that, quote, the 3 detainees had clearly been tortured, end quote. Ann Garrels reported in her piece on NPR the following, quote, there was blood all over their clothing. They were in such bad shape they couldn't walk. They had to be dragged onto the chairs, and one of them was just sobbing. End quote. Now, as Fair points out, given the brutal treatment that was obvious of these three men, there's no reason to put any stock whatsoever in the claims they made in the presence of their captors. Anne Garrels is sitting there. Thugs from Muqtada al-Sadr's militia are there. They drag in these three guys who have been brutally beaten and tortured and made to answer questions. Fair points out, as Alfred McCoy writes in his book, A Question of Torture, quote, "The past two millennia are rich with examples that confirm time again the strong can resist torture and the weak will say anything to end their pain," end quote. But as Fair points out, nevertheless, Anne Garrels began recounting their statements in response to anchor Steve Inkeep's asking, quote, "The question that's on the minds of many Americans right now, Anne, which is, what is Iran's role in all this violence?" End quote. Why does NPR believe that stories produced by torture help to answer that question? If that bothers you, first go to fair.org and find this story, and then there's a link there where you can send an email to the executive producer of NPR's Morning Edition. That's not a bad idea. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Jerry Lanson, writing at the Christian Science Monitor, has a question that you and I talk about all the time, about anti-war demonstrations that get absolutely no coverage whatsoever by anybody, any place. And Lanson's position is that there were coordinated anti-war protests in at least 11 American cities this weekend just passed. And it raised again that question about the nature of news coverage. Are the media ignoring rallies against the Iraq war because of their low turnout? Or is the turnout low because of the lack of news coverage? And Jerry Lanson writes, "I find it unsettling that I even have to consider the question." He says that most Americans oppose the war in Iraq is well established. The latest CBS News poll in mid-October found 26% of those polled approved the way Bush is handling the war, and 67% disapproved. He says, given that context, it seems remarkable to me that in some of the 11 cities in which protests were held, Boston and New York, for example, major news outlets treated this National Day of Action as though it did not exist. As far as I can tell, neither the New York Times nor the Boston Globe had so much as a news brief about the march and the days leading up to it. The day after, the Times, at least, in its national edition, totally ignored the thousands who marched in New York and the tens of thousands who marched nationwide. The Globe relegated the news of 10,000 spirited citizens, including me, marching through Boston's rain-dampened streets to a short piece deep inside its metro section. A single sentence noted the event's national context. Jerry Lanson writes, "As a former newspaper editor, I was most taken aback by the silence beforehand. Surely any march of widespread interest warrants a brief news item to let people know what the event is, that the event is taking place and that they can participate. It's called, quote, advancing the news, end quote, and it has a time-honored place in American newsrooms. With irony, Frank Rich wrote in his October 14th Times column, quote, "We can continue to blame the Bush administration for the horrors of Iraq, but we must also examine our own responsibility," end quote. And then he goes on to suggest we must examine our own silence. So, why would Frank Rich's news colleagues deprive people of information needed to take exactly that responsibility? He says, "I'm not suggesting here that the Times or any news organization should be in collusion with a movement, pro-war or anti-war, pro-choice, pro-life, pro-government, pro-privatization. I am suggesting that news organizations cover the news, that they inform the public about any widespread effort to give voice to those who share a widely held view about any major national issue." And then he decries the idea that news is about how people can participate in democracy. There's a lack of news about how people can participate in a democracy that's overrun with campaign platitudes, big plate fundraisers. What's missing is news that keeps democracy vibrant, news that keeps it healthy. And then he quotes Joseph Pulitzer, the editor and publisher for whom the highest honor in journalism is named. In May 1904, Joseph Pulitzer wrote, quote, "Our republic and its press rise or fall together. An able, disinterested, public-spirited press can preserve that public virtue without which popular government is a sham and a mockery. The power to mold the future of the republic will be in the hands of the journalists of future generations." End quote. Wow. The power to mold the future of the republic will be in the hands of the journalists of future generations. If that's the truth, and God help us, you and I know it is, then I guess Martha Stewart and O.J. Simpson, Ray Dux and Paris Hilton and Britney Spears and all the rest of that crap is where we're at. And then the big news today, I don't know if you've been following this story, but the acting head of the Consumer Product Safety Commission, the commissioner, Nancy Nord, says that if Congress appropriates more money for her agency that is charged with making sure that $200 billion worth of imports a year are safe, if Congress appropriates money, if Congress decides to raise the fines, the amount of the fines that would be levied against companies, U.S. companies that knowingly import dangerous products, if any of that happens, she doesn't want it to happen. She opposes provisions that would increase the maximum penalties for safety violations. She opposes regulations that would make it easier for the government to make public reports of faulty products. She opposes regulations that would protect industry whistleblowers. She opposes provisions that would prosecute executives of companies that willfully violate U.S. law. Who is this creep? She was critical, for instance, of a provision that's going to be in this new bill to ban lead from all toys. Why? Because she says it's not practical. Son of a bitch! This is somebody who is supposed to Consumer Product Safety Administration or Commission. What does that mean? Well, there are lots of clues in the name of the organization. Let me see. Consumer, there's a clue. Product, woo! Another one right there. Safety, uh-oh! There's a big one. Wasn't even hiding behind a palm tree. It's right there. Safety Commission. She's asked Congress to reject legislation intended to strengthen her agency, which makes sure that all the products that are coming into this country, because it's cheaper to produce them in some godforsaken child labor, forced labor building than to have American workers produce them. And it's cheaper to slather them up with lead paint or put poison in them or allow roach parts and vile and disgusting, dangerous. According to this woman, it's easier to do that than it is to run her agency. And she is the acting head, which means she's never been confirmed. Another one of these, I'm sure it's one of these recess appointments. In the last 2 months alone, more than 13 million toys have been recalled after tests indicated lead levels that sometimes reached 200 times the safety limit, as if there's a safe limit to lead exposure for our kids. And this psycho person says, well, it's not practical to ban lead from toys. Not practical. What the... Now, obviously, this is, you know, one more Bush appointee among scores, dozens, hundreds, whose sole function is to destroy the regulatory system in this country that attempts, going all the way back to the turn of the last century, When the frightening book The Jungle was written, has made an attempt to regulate the safety of the products that we touch, handle, eat, clothe ourselves in, live in. And what the Bush crime family has been trying to do, starting with the Reagan crime family, is remove all restrictions. This is what... This has been the goal of Republicans for how long now? More in a minute. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Border to border and coast to coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
The facts are these. This comes from... who sent me this? Campaign for America's Future? Yeah, Campaign for America's Future. More and more Americans, consumers, are at risk from products that aren't produced here or aren't subject to our safety standards. Senator Sherrod Brown, Democrat of Ohio, Representative Rosa DeLauro, Democrat of Connecticut, joined Campaign for America's Future, the co-director, Robert Borisage, and senior fellow David Sirota, you know him, and on a conference call with reporters today, and released a report that calls for Nord's resignation. Nancy Nord, the acting commissioner of the Consumer Product Safety Commission. It is astonishing to me that a person who is charged with the safety of products that we're going to come in contact with and our kids are going to come in contact with, says, nah, I'm not interested. Gail Norton, who is the Secretary of the Interior in the first Bush administration, she was a former lobbyist for the lead industry. These son of a bitches want to see us all die. Tell me I'm wrong. You
New York Times says, Ms. Nord's opposition to important elements of the legislation is consistent with the broadly deregulatory approach of the Bush administration over the last 7 years. In a variety of areas, from antitrust to trucking and worker safety, officials appointed by President Bush have sought to reduce the role of regulation in the marketplace. Ah, really? It's astonishing. Now, what about her? What about Ms. Nord? Ms. Nord. Oh, and by the way, keep in mind, Ron Paul, one of the first things he would do as president would be to abolish the Consumer Product Safety Commission. He's a libertarian. Get that out of here! And how do we make sure that we're getting safe products? Very simply, if you buy toys for your child from, say, Mattel, and your child on a just a random trip to the pediatrician is examined, and it turns out that your baby has about 200 times the acceptable level of lead showing up in your baby's urine or blood or hair, and your baby's mental development is now at risk, not to mention the neurological development, then Ron Paul would say to you, well, just stop buying your toys from Mattel. You don't need government regulation. Ron Paul is a phony. Ron Paul, please, you people who are sucking up to this guy, what the hell is wrong with you? He is Bush on steroids where it concerns destroying every single regulatory agency and replacing it with the most predatory of predatory capitalism that you and I can't even imagine. Ron Paul, my ass. My God. Anyway, Ms. Nord, Nancy Nord, before joining the Consumer Product Safety Commission, was a lawyer at Eastman Kodak and an official at the United States Chamber of Commerce. She sent letters last week to members of the Democratic leaders of the committee involved in the Senate Commerce Committee and overseeing this garbage. She sent letters, and she was critical, for instance, of that provision to ban lead from all toys, saying it was not practical. And she said that the proposal to raise the potential penalty to $100 million to companies that knowingly violate U.S. law, here's what she said. Well, that may have the undesired consequence of firms, as a precautionary measure, flooding the agency with virtually every consumer complaint and incident. Touch, touch, tisk, tisk. We can't have that. She also criticized a provision that would give state prosecutors the authority to enforce the federal consumer safety laws. Well, why not? The federal government isn't. So I saw bits and snatches of the story today, heard it on the radio and saw a little bit on television. I thought, what the hell is going on? I've never heard of Nancy Nord. But there she is, acting commissioner of the Consumer Product Safety Commission. Nancy Nord opposes everything that her agency is supposed to do. That is exactly what Republicans do. That's what they do. That's what Bush has done. They appoint people to regulatory agencies who will either gut every single comprehensive regulatory statute that has been passed to protect us, or they will refuse to enforce the ones already on the books. And why? Well, because we are no longer a republic. We're a corporatist state. Or, if you're uncomfortable with that term, try this one. Fascist.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Now it's Dennis Kucinich who is questioning Bush's mental health. He was talking to the Philadelphia Inquirer's editorial board, which is a matter of policy. You know, presidential candidates for anything, it will get together with the newspaper's editorial board and take some questions that will then be used to give these writers and editors background information on the candidate. In this meeting, I think yesterday, today, he said, quote, "I seriously believe we have to start asking questions about Bush's mental health. There's something wrong. He does not seem to understand. His words have real impact." And, of course, Kucinich was referring most recently to Bush's warning of the consequences if Iran even figures out how to get nuclear weapons. That's when he said, if you're interested in avoiding World War III, Iran must be prevented from achieving nuclear capability. Kucinich, in a press release to Raw Story last week, rawstory.com, Kucinich took Bush and other administration officials to task for trying to, quote, deceive Americans into yet another war, this time with Iran. Kucinich went on to say, quote, "After the lies and deception used to lead us to war in Iraq, the belligerent Bush administration cannot be given leeway with statements that suggest a preemptive attack on Iran is necessary." He went on to say, "We are systematically destroying every available route to restoring peace and security in the Middle East. Congress must take back its exclusive authority to declare war from the Bush administration," end quote. Yeah, I frankly don't think there's any question. Are we going to have the guy on this program, Kathy, that wrote Bush on the Couch? Okay. When's that? Next week, maybe? George Bush is a madman. There is no question about it, to the same extent that any other mass killer who was a government official is a madman. I don't care if it was Saddam Hussein or Ferdinand Marcos or George W. Bush or Pol Pot. It doesn't matter. He's a killer. Let's do some phone calls. Let's start with Mark, who's listening via the internet, calling from Georgia. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Pretty good. Mike, I initially wanted to talk about Ann Coulter, but I just ate, so I don't want to throw up again. I think when you were talking about the Consumer Protection Department agency, I think nothing's more important to this president than getting us involved in another in a war with Iran. Nothing is. Everything is subordinate to that.
I think you're right.
Everything. He doesn't care how many people die. He doesn't care if your child dies of lead poisoning. He doesn't. He doesn't care how many children die of lead poisoning. Nothing is more important than going into Iran. Why? I don't know. I can't figure it out. Why this lunatic, this madman, is so determined to take us into war against a country that he says is like Nazi Germany. Iran has the GDP of Connecticut. Iran, Ahmadinejad is not the real leader of Iran. Everybody knows that. I don't understand it. We have a madman in office.
You know, part of it is the fact that the Likudniks in Israel and the American Zionists, who in this country we call them neoconservatives, they are the ones dictating U.S. foreign policy where it concerns the Middle East. There's no question about this. And when this is brought up on a program like mine, I get a flood of emails that range from disagreement to calling me, as always, an anti-Semite. But the fact is, if you look at the people who have written Middle East policy for George W. Bush, and other presidents, but let's stick with George W. Bush, especially George W. Bush. These are Likudniks. These are people who represent what they consider to be the best interests of the state of Israel, not the best interests of the United States, period. And yeah. Bush goes along with this because there is this macabre, weird tie-in between this half-dead, flopping Christian right in this country and the Likudniks in Israel, the Zionists in Israel. It's a horrifying situation, horrifying. The other reason, if another one is needed, is because Iran has the second largest provable reserves of oil. Yeah. So, you put the two together. But if there's anyone out there, I don't care if you're American or Israeli, I don't care what you're, I have absolutely no concern about your point of view. But if there's anyone out there who wants to send me an email or give me a phone call to disagree with the idea that U.S. Middle East policy is being directed and formulated by people whose primary interest is the state of Israel, I ask you to call. Send me an email.
Well, Mike, Israel has an estimated 200 nuclear weapons. Do you really believe that Iran would risk destruction, which is what it would do, even if it did have nuclear weapons? Do you believe they would use them on Israel and destroy themselves in the process?
I believe that there are regimes in the Middle East who probably would, if having access to nuclear weapons would initiate a war against Israel. Yeah, I do. But that is the result of Israeli policy against the Palestinians for the past, especially the past 30 years. It's also the result of a failure of policy by the United States through the last 7 years to try to work out an agreement between these people who just despise each other, the Israelis and the Palestinians. So do I believe that any country would of course, because of the madness that persists in the Middle East, which is not to negate my first statement, which is U.S. Middle East policy is being dictated by people whose primary interest is the survival of the state of Israel, period.
Well, what about the Reverend John Hagee?
Well, there you go.
There you go. He thinks you can trigger a nuclear war and Jesus will come floating out of the clouds.
He is one of the... Go ahead.
He is one of the spiritual advisors, so to speak, to George W. Bush. What a nut.
I know. Hagee, or however you say his name, he's like so many of these. He calls himself a Christian Zionist, which is just an absolute contradiction in terms. It makes no sense. But he calls himself that, and Hagee would be the first one to take a razor-sharp knife and cut the neck of the nearest Jew who did not, when his Lord and Savior returns, according to Hagee, who did not immediately accept Jesus as the Messiah. Hagee would be the first one to start slashing the throats of Jews. I don't get this. I don't understand it. I never have. It just, the whole thing drives me insane, Mark. This god-awful, wretched, sickening alliance between American fundamental dominionist Christians and Zionists in Israel. I don't get it. Hello? Is Mark, all right. Mark, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
And then you have Ann Coulter saying Jews have to become perfected.
Well, right. She's only, all Ann Coulter is doing is parroting the right-wing Christian attitude here. That's why I can't understand. Now, Bill Maher is a Jew. He's going to have Ann Coulter on again? This is the part that drives me crazy.
Yeah.
There are so many folks who have... Wolf Blitzer is Jewish. He's going to put Ann Coulter on? And the answer to both those questions is yes and yes. I don't get this.
I don't understand it. Why does this woman, who is obviously deeply anti-Semitic, you don't make a statement like that. She's not talking about Israelis. She's talking about Jews. That's a religious bigotry that is so far beyond the pale as to render it almost Hitlerian. But
Do you remember David Brock's book, Blinded by the Right?
Yes, absolutely. He's the one that runs the website now, MediaMatters.org. It's a great website.
In which he worked with Ann Coulter, and he stated in that book, and I'm surprised this hasn't come out more, he stated in that book that she was very anti-Semitic. She was constantly making anti-Jewish remarks.
Always. Absolutely.
And it's astounding how this doesn't get reported, how the connection is never made.
I know. It's just, I don't know. Sometimes I just, I've said before on the Middle Eastern issues, I just throw up my hands and run screaming into the woods. Because American media do not treat the issue fairly. American presidents and leaders do not work with their counterparts in the Middle East and Europe to try to bring out, to bring about some kind of settlement between the Israelis and the Palestinians. And so this open, festering wound just continues. And the people setting U.S. Middle East policy are Likudniks, they are American Zionists, and are these Christian freaks who couldn't care less about death and destruction. Hey,
yep.
Mark, I got to leave there. Thanks, pal.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Appreciate you checking in. Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malone.
Because life's too short to listen to right-wing radio, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Before we go back to your phone calls, Lori just sent this to me. This is from tomorrow's Washington Post. all those administrative orders and signing statements and stuff that Bush has is so famous for? The Post is now reporting Michael Abramowitz and Jonathan Wiseman, writing for the Washington Post, report the following. The White House plans to try implementing as much new policy as it can by administrative order while stepping up its confrontational rhetoric with Congress. After concluding that President Bush cannot do much business with the Democratic leadership, that's according to administration officials. According to those officials, Bush and his advisors blamed Democrats for the holdup of Judge Michael Mukasey's nomination to be Attorney General, the failure to pass any of the 12 annual spending bills, and what they see as Democrats' refusal to involve the White House in any meaningful negotiations over the stalemated children's health care legislation. Yeah, it's the Democrats' fault. White House aides say the only way Bush seems to be able to influence the process is by vetoing legislation or by issuing administrative orders, as he has in recent weeks on veterans' health care, air traffic congestion, protecting endangered fish, and immigration. These sources say they expect Bush to issue more such orders in the next several months, even as he speaks out on the need to limit spending and resist any tax increases. Do you understand what's being said here? Or what's being written here? Bush is going to make the effort to actually put into play the powers normally reserved to dictators. He's going to rule by executive order. Do you get that? It's I wonder how the Democratic Party leadership is going to respond to this. I wonder how these filthy, cowardly, chicken hawk Republicans are going to respond to this. There will be a record. There will be of the members of Congress, Democrat and Republican, when the first president in our history
decided he was going to become a dictator. I'm not talking about occasional lapses that everybody from Abraham Lincoln, a Republican, to Franklin Roosevelt, a Democrat, attempted, Harry Truman, until the United States Supreme Court or the Congress slapped their asses back into shape and said, yo, hold on a minute. You represent one-third of the government. And every president who has tried to do this has been smacked silly. Don't do it again. Except for Bush. And when you take a look at the cowardice that is rampant in this Congress, there's not a Republican in the House or the Senate who has the spine to stand up to anybody. They're shills, punks, liars, and butt boys for corporate America. As far as the Democratic Party is concerned, please, don't even get me started on them. Every single promise that was made to us, the voters, who put the Democrats back in power, every promise, with the exception of Waxman's that he would hold hearings, every promise has been broken by the Democratic Party leadership. Every single promise. Or ignored. Which is worse. So here comes Bush. Thanks, Lori, for sending that in. That sure as hell makes my night. Oh, my God. Bush is going to rule by executive order because those dirty, rotten Democrats won't sit down and talk to him, which means they won't completely roll over on their backs. They're on their sides. But in order to scratch their tummies, Bush has to lean over, and he doesn't want that. Roll over on your back, is his order. And the Democratic Party puppy that is the House and the Senate hasn't rolled completely over yet. So Bush is going to rule by executive fiat. Will this be the tipping point? Will this inspire reaction from Congress or the Supreme? Oh, never mind the Supreme Court. What, are you kidding me? Oh, Jesus! The Supreme Court is loaded with federalists. They think it's a grand idea that Bush exercised extreme power. So if you want to find out what's in store, read the article in you can get it online right now, WashingtonPost.com. Way off topic, but I have a question. Maybe somebody has an answer because I really don't. Maybe somebody out there who's worked as an EMS person. My son spent some time doing that when he was a fireman, but he has no answer for me. Why is it that after a tragedy, the most recent example being this house fire at the beach in the Carolinas, where these University of South Carolina and Clemson University students burned to death, why is it that no sooner does an event like that occur than the cable news networks and the over-the-air networks, the broadcast networks, start playing the 911 tapes, the calls, the emergency calls from people to report a fire. And you hear, usually you hear these, what sounds to you and me, like asinine back and forth. Now, to the 911 operators, I guess not. They're trying to get pertinent information. But you have people who are panicking. They're watching a house burn up, and they see that there are people inside being killed by these flames. What is it? Whoever said that those kinds of tapes with the shrieking horror and the distraught voices and people just going over the edge with shock and terror, that we should hear that? Where did that come from? Welcome back, 7 past the hour. This is the Nova M Radio Network. I'm Mike Malloy. If you're still with us, I admire your staying power. Prairie 2 writes, regarding Iran, Mike, the neocons are so obsessed with Iran because they don't want an industrialized Middle East. How many Americans know that Iran produces 1 million cars each year? Well, I damn sure didn't. It isn't the production of nukes that Bush really wants halted. It's all production. Well, okay, yeah, sure. That's another thing that predatory capitalism does. It absolutely wants to control the markets. And if that means pulling off the market a competitor, sure. What's this? Gordon sent me this from KXLY.com in Spokane, Washington. Not another one. Oh, my God. State Representative Richard Curtis, Republican, from La Center, Washington, says he's not gay. But police reports and court records indicate the Republican lawmaker from southwestern Washington dressed up in women's lingerie and met a medical lake man in a local erotic video store, which led to consensual sex at a downtown hotel, and then a threat to expose Representative Curtis's activities publicly. Ah, blackmail.
Sounds completely heterosexual to me.
Yeah, well, it does, doesn't it? This is the sad part, the blackmail, the risk that self-hating Republicans expose themselves to. A search warrant unsealed Tuesday morning disclosed that State Representative Richard Curtis, Republican of La Center, had sex in his room at the Davenport Tower with a man identified as Cody Castagna. Wow, you ought to see a picture of him here. Whom he met at the Hollywood Erotic Boutique on October 26. Oh, never mind. I can't read any more of this. Thanks, Gordon. Gordon's point was just to, another anti-gay Republican gets caught with his hypocrisy showing. Yeah, thanks, Gordon. So sad. I used to get some kind of macabre pleasure out of the exposure of these hypocritical bastards, but I don't anymore. To me, these stories are just monumentally sad. Incredibly sad. When I stop to think how twisted a person has to malform their psyche in order to live, pretend to be a heterosexual, sometimes to the point of going all the way through a marriage with a member of the opposite sex, producing children, maintaining that facade. How excruciatingly painful is that? And yet, the pain of being exposed for who one really is in this sick, freaked out society would, in these people's minds, be even worse. And it just breaks my heart. I mean it. I'm not being the least bit hypocritical, sarcastic here, or maudlin, or anything of the sort. It is heartbreaking that so many Republican men in positions of power, whether it's in these religious organizations or in the Republican Party, whatever it is, have had to twist their lives like a pretzel in order to pretend. And then when they are discovered,
my heart breaks for them. It just breaks for them. It's one thing to sit back and go, hee, 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 look at you, you hypocritical bastard. But, you know, that gets old real quick. You know, that's really kind of a juvenile attitude to begin with. The crushing pain that these people have to endure now because of their lies and their deception, their hypocrisy. It's just, man, oh well. Oh well, I digress. Back to your phone calls. Tim is calling from Atlanta, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Tim.
Hi, Mike. Honored to speak with you.
Pleasure's all mine. From Atlanta, homeboy, hey.
Hey, yes, sir. I guess I wanted to talk about Russia and its potential involvement in Iran. I spent some time there a few years ago, and I still communicate with people in Russia. And the thing about the Iraq war is that the obviously caused the price of oil to go through the ceiling, and it's allowed Russia to sort of sharpen its nuclear teeth. I don't hear much in the news about it. It's like they don't exist anymore, but I only think there are about 200 nuclear weapons short of us. And I get the impression that people think they're just still a dilapidated state, but their economy's growing about 10% a year. And nobody seems to mention that, but didn't Putin warn Bush not to do this?
Yeah, the warning, I think, was as explicit as allowed in international diplomatic language from one leader to another. But to the extent that Putin made himself clear using diplomatic language, neither Putin nor Bush are capable of diplomatic language. But to the extent that he did, I think Bush didn't get the message. Bush is a jackass. But I think the people around Bush probably translated it for him and said, look, you're really pissing off, lad. You're setting up something here, another one of Bush's unintended consequences. You're right, with oil approaching $100 a barrel, the Russians, now that the Soviet Union is broken up and it's just Russia, the Russians are getting to the point, the Russian treasury must be just wallowing in income, and if not now, very soon. And Russia is only, what, 140 million people? It's not like the old Soviet Union that was just monstrous and huge and massive. I mean, I realize Russia still has a massive landmass, but you know what I'm saying. They don't have all these disparate peoples and dumas and parliaments and dictators and regional crap to manage. All Putin has to do is run his own little dictatorship, and with just billions and billions and billions of euros or dollars or whatever the hell, ruble, I don't even know what the Russians use anymore, with all that flowing in, what I read the other day, the Russians now are deciding to build a new nuclear weapons technology. And Putin is talking about that like he's got a new house pet, you know, and that's to offset Bush.
Well, I one of my friends did say that there's a nationalistic fervor going on, and it's caused because, Bush in 2001, he rescinded the treaty that forbid
the ABM treaty, the anti-ballistic missile treaty, so that Bush could pursue with his military-industrial corporate supporters the Star Wars program.
Right, exactly. That's and they're not stupid. They know what this is about. They know more than we do what's actually going on. Those missile systems that Bush wants to put into Poland are not defensive; they're offensive.
Even going back to Reagan, they were always offensive. They were never defensive. That was the joke that was sold to the American public. The rest of the world knew exactly what that system is all about. It's about first strike capability, so that when you do launch a massive attack against your enemy can't respond, because anything your enemy puts up to try to blow your cities into a million pieces will be shot down. It's purely offensive, purely offensive. And again, everybody knew this except the American public.
Right. You obviously know a lot about this. I just haven't been this frightened since I was a teenager. And you remember this mad mutually assured destruction, but the Pentagon, and they're talking like nuclear war is winnable now. And it just scares me.
It scares me too. Tim, take it easy. All right, I appreciate you checking in. All right, man, drive safely. Thanks for checking in tonight. Yeah, unintended consequences of which Bush's career as an oil man, a world leader, a human being. There's just a trail of unintended consequences behind this thug. And when one of the unintended consequences happens to be thermonuclear war or a confrontation, you know, Putin is already saying that what Bush is doing is like the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962. Jesus God! I mean, if you don't know what he's talking about, Truth Seeker, because you're under the age of 40, look it up. Look it up.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Welcome back, 22. That's the hour. Phone number here is 800-989-1480. Back to your phone calls. Terry is calling from St. Paul, Minnesota, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Terry.
Hey, Mike. Good to hear from you, or be on your radio station. I wanted to talk about John Edwards. Yeah, I could talk about a lot of subjects. It just, you know, this Nancy Nord and
I know.
You know, just it's just a Blackwater.
It's overwhelming.
Yeah, I know. I'm just depressed about it. I can't, you know, I don't really watch TV. I don't, you know, go on a computer really. I go on there periodically at the library, look for, you know, work and stuff like that. But people got to get, you know, we got to get together, you know. The Democrat, you know, I believe in Democratic policies.
Right.
Yep, my dad was a Democrat. My uncle, he grew up, you know, unions.
I hear you. So me too.
I've always voted Democrat. I've never sat on the fence, never wavered. And Bush is an idiot. Yeah, you know, I mean, if I could build a prison, if I could do this and that, I would. But you know, we don't have any business over at all, you know, all these different foreign countries. You know, some we do probably, but Edwards is probably, you know, Gore. It'd make me happy to see the smirk on George Bush's face at 2009 transfer of presidency to Al Gore. But that's not going to happen. I think Edwards is probably the only guy that I'd really feel comfortable with. I don't think Hillary, you know, she's getting all that money, but I think John Edwards would probably be the best bet. But the Democrats, what's the problem? Can't they get together like, you know, all the Republicans did back in 94 with the contract with America with the Gingrich, you know. I mean, we gotta get together.
Well, the problem is what it's always been with Democrats, Terry. We're just not followers. We're not like a herd. We're not like lemmings. Republicans, the Republican rank and file is terrified of individual thought. They want someone to tell them what to do, either their minister or their member of Congress or their president. And when all three of them are telling the same thing, that Republican would rather open a vein than do anything different, because he's being told by, or she is being told by, the pastor, the senator, the representative, and the president to do the same thing. Sit up, shut down, or shut up, sit down, and let fascism ease your mind.
That's what they want. They want,
right.
they're taking away, they want to take all our voices away. They want us to make to pick up tin cans in the alley,
The point is, though, that's the reason Democrats, it seems, it's so difficult for Democrats to get on the same page, because we're not lemmings, we're not followers. If somebody tells us to do something, we're liable to say, you're out of your freaking mind, tell me why I should do it, and if your reason ain't good enough, I'm going to turn to somebody else.
But
Republicans don't do that, because they're followers.
Well, that would be more of a libertarian, wouldn't it? The libertarian Republican. That's what it would be. But, you know, unions, civil rights, national health care.
All of it. All of it comes from the minds of Democrats. All of it.
Yeah, it's all got to, we all got to be on that page. If we're not on that page, what are we, I could talk on and on. I told three people, I said, F you, F you, F you. Then after I choked my food down during my unpaid lunch, I went in the office and I told the boss to get screwed. Okay.
All right, Terry. Now listen. Listen to me very closely. I've got to put. I've got to move on. But get a grip. I tell myself this all the time. I look in the mirror every morning when I'm shaving, and I say, Malloy, get a grip. Terry, get a grip. The day will come when the barricades go up, and Terry, you and I will be on the same side. And you fire while I load, and then you load while I fire. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Cleaning up America, one flying monkey at a time. It's Mike Malloy.
All right, it's 25 before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Phil is calling from Stony Brook, New York, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
It's just rocking and rolling, pal.
Great. I just wanted to talk about the conflict in the Middle East.
What did he say? I think he was trying to be slick and just didn't know how to pull it off. And Ian nailed him to the cross. Way to go, Phil. Was that his name, Phil? No, you can't win in the contest against Ian and Mike. Your ass will be handed to you, so to speak, every single time. Give it up. Punk.
I'm tired of playing with myself. I think I'll call the Malloy program and make an ass out of myself.
No, you didn't. All the audience heard was silence. Teresa is calling from New Jersey, listening on the internet. Hey, Teresa, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hey.
Mike.
Teresa.
I cannot believe all the things that has happened. And I can't believe Nancy Pelosi. That was really the last straw with me, with Stark.
Yeah.
Remember that, Stark? And
yeah.
I have to say, there's got to be blackmail with the telecoms being, them wanting to grant them immunity. Mm-hmm. It's got to be blackmail.
I can't.
Or are they that much of cowards? I mean, what? How could you be such cowards?
They call me asking me
for money. I said, don't even call me.
I don't even think it's that.
You don't think they're... You don't think they're being blackmailed?
No, I don't. I think what it is being subsumed, copping out to the power. You know, you've heard it. Power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Unless you have a person in a position like Speaker of the U.S. House or President of the United States or Vice President, unless you have a person in those positions who have strength of character, who have an ethical center, who have a sense of morality, and none of these people seem to have that. Unless you have that, you have what we are seeing, a president who is out of control, a vice president who deserves to be in a mental institution, and a Speaker of the House who would sell her soul given enough power. That's where we are, Teresa. I don't see the blackmail at all.
But she would still be in power. Like, the country would support these Democrats. What? I don't understand. It's not like way back in 9/11 times when everybody was rah-rah,
yeah,
you know, God, country, and core.
I think everybody believes
that these people have to go. I think.
Well, I again, Teresa, I just think it's power. I think it's the insanity that comes from having power and thinking that you have more than you really have. And also fear. I don't deny that. I wouldn't say blackmail, but fear. I'm sure that there is an element or there's a part of the mind of every member of the House and the Senate, whether they're Democrat or Republican, that they could be offed at any time by some thug from Blackwater. They could be shipped to Syria for torture. They could be shipped to Egypt to have their fingernails ripped out. Their families could be disappeared. That's one of the reasons I carry a gun at all times, because I understand the madness of these bastards.
But that's what I mean. These people, I mean, they're serious about threatening people.
I know.
Like, they're no joke. They will really do something to you. This is why, I mean, there's got to be some fear involved that they're cowards.
Yeah, I agree with the fear part. I just don't think it's blatant, open, upfront blackmail. You know, do what we tell you, Nancy Pelosi, or we're going to talk about the time you and the German Shepherd. Well, you know, I don't think that's it at all. I think you're right. I think it has something to do with fear. But it also, as far as I'm concerned, has to do with power. When you get that, you know, let's face it, the Speaker of the House is number three in line for the presidency. That is a pretty powerful position to be in, whether it's ever used or not. It's on the books. And no matter who it is, man, woman, Jew, Gentile, gay, straight, doesn't make any difference. When you get that close to power,
this country would support her if they would just have some spine.
I know.
I mean, what? It's not like she wouldn't be supported by going against these people. They would be supported, and it's just sickening.
I know. It is. Well, we can certainly agree on that. Teresa, thanks. Appreciate you checking in. Take care. It's getting that point of the program where the frustration level is starting to build. I hear it in your calls. Oh, not the little self-abusing jerk that called in here, but I'm tired of playing with myself. I think I'll call Malloy. But I feel it. I feel it in your phone calls. Let's move on. Christina, listening in Scottsdale, Arizona, listening on our flagship station, KPHX. Hey, Christina.
Hello?
Hi, Christina.
Hi, Mike. This is Christina Agogo. Remember we met at the party in Scottsdale?
Shh. Hey, don't. Yeah, I remember. Hi, Christina.
Hi. I'm glad I finally got through.
Yeah, you did, didn't you?
Yeah, and I'm sorry I missed the cruise. I really wanted to go, but I couldn't.
I'll tell you what, I and the 75 people and, of course, Kathy and probably Molly, who went on that trip, would have been thrilled to have had Christina Agogo in the crowd. That would have been that would have been a real treat.
I could have told some funny stories.
Okay, don't go any further.
Well, I didn't call to tell you a funny story, but what I wanted to talk about is earlier you were talking about Miss Nord.
Yeah, what about her?
Well, I don't know very much about her. I just know that you had said something about, are they just trying to kill all of us? Or you said something about that. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to just kind of interject theory or that the information about the group of people that want to eliminate 80% of our population for their own personal enjoyment. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I'm not sure. Who?
Well, apparently the Illuminati or whatever you want to call them. I mean, there's different names and maybe there's different groups, but apparently they have this divine and they have a divine and master plan that they started to work on in the 50s. And I actually had heard about it quite a number of years ago, where they feel that if the population of the planet was limited to about 2 billion people, that it would be controllable for them. And, of course, these are the wealthiest, most powerful people in the world.
Right. Well, I don't think that was necessarily a group like the so-called Illuminati. I think there are otherwise rational elites on this planet who would agree with that idea. You know, get the population of the Earth down to 2 billion instead of 6 billion and hold it there.
Mm-hmm.
It'll make it much more fun for the people who are selected to stay. And in fact, you know, this is something we should have thought about, I don't know, maybe 60 years ago. I can remember when I was a kid finding out that the population of the Earth was about to turn 3 billion and being stunned by that. Or hell, was it 2 billion? I don't even remember. I'm not that old. But and now where are we? 6 or 7 billion. In my lifetime, I do know this, in my lifetime it's more than doubled.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there comes a point when the planet is just unable to sustain that kind of a viral growth on Earth. And there is a theory, the theory of Gaia, that the Earth is a living organism, that we humans are a bacterium or a virus, and that the Earth is going to shrug us off. The Earth is going to get rid of us in the same way that I get rid of a cold. By watching, you know, by staying in bed, drinking liquids, taking some vitamin C, and eventually it goes away. So, no, I'm familiar with what you're talking about. I just don't think it's the so-called Illuminati. I think it's just people who would like to have a bigger playground and less of scum like you and me.
Mm-hmm. And I think they do things that encourage the elimination of people on a mass scale. You know, I mean, I don't know how much evidence or proof we have, but there's a lot of things that are going on where you wonder, you know, why do they let all these people die?
I don't disagree with that. I think there is a mindset among some of these neocon bastards that a nuclear exchange, I'm sure this is true back in the 60s, that a nuclear exchange would have a purifying effect and that they could survive. These psychos could survive, and at the end of a thermonuclear exchange on this planet, there would be enough corpses and dead people that after a while, when the stench was gone and the bodies were decomposed and the atmosphere got back to normal, they could live their lives. What they aren't figuring on is what Jonathan Schell wrote about when he wrote about the fate of the Earth, and that is nuclear winter. If there's ever an exchange, a full-blown thermonuclear exchange, all life on this planet ends. It's just that simple. Christina, I got to leave it there. Thanks. I appreciate it. Christina Agogo from the old neighborhood out there in Scottsdale. Yow! We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. I keep thinking of Upton Sinclair tonight after that story or that article about, what's your name, Nord? The head of the Consumer Product Safety Division, who says, well, it wouldn't be practical to get all the lead out of the paint used on the toys our kids play with. It wouldn't be practical to make sure that workers at the meat packing factories in Chicago who fall into the choppers and cutters aren't just included in your next pack of hamburger. I mean, that would hardly be practical. It's just crazy. When was The Jungle written, Kathy? 1909, 1910, 1908, somewhere around there. And here we still are. It's just insane. Thanks to our crew, Ian Huff for co-producing the program, engineering and answering your calls. We just work him to death, don't we? Billy Foster, who does everything else at this network. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, and, of course, the executive producer of this program, Catherine Bay. AJ is calling from Hart Springs, Arkansas, listening on Sirius. Hey, AJ. Another AJ.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
This is not AJ the Music Factory. We have two AJs. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Actually, I own a music shop here in Hot Springs.
I can't believe this. Really?
Yeah, for real, yeah.
Well, I hope AJ the Music Factory in the Catskills is listening. You guys are somehow psychically connected. That's incredible.
How about that?
Yeah.
Isn't that cool? I just called to tell you, man, that I am sick of the rhetoric. I'm sick of the sellouts. I am just sick of the whole process, the whole electoral process. I'm sick of the sellouts to corporate America.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know, Mike, how you can call yourself a Democrat. I voted as a Democrat last time, and I know. Clinton, Hillary's a sellout. Pelosi's a sellout, you know?
Yep.
She's leading in the polls. You know why? Because she's a sellout, and she's gonna have to pay that back when she gets in office.
That's right.
Barack Obama, they hadn't figured it out yet. Okay, he's not a sellout, but look at him in the polls. Where's he at? You know, right?
So what do we do? What do we do, AJ?
What do we do, man? I don't know what we do.
Drop back.
We got to take the country back. I don't know how.
Then drop back 10 yards and punt.
Yeah, punt, man. I mean, what do you do? I mean. It's a ridiculous system. It doesn't work. It's broken. And corporate America is running us in the ground, man. It's about greed.
I know. I'm like you. I swear to God, I get so tired of hearing it. All these so-called debates that are on television, I would not watch one of those if somebody held a gun to my head or threatened me with waterboarding. Oh, okay, maybe I would then. But and there was another one tonight, this one from Philadelphia, from Drexel University. It was carried on MSNBC. I had it on in the background here with the sound off, and every time I saw most of the faces, the jaws flapping of these Democratic candidates, a couple of whom I really like. I really do like Dennis Kucinich. There's a couple of them. There's some points that Joe Biden makes. But every time I see the faces, and I like Edwards, every time I see the faces of the so-called frontrunners, though, I don't have to turn up the sound. I know what they're saying. It's just the same old BS. I just wish...
And the other guys can't get elected.
Well, that's...
Because they don't have the money behind them.
That's the thing.
So what do we do, Mike?
Drop back 10 yards and punt.
Yeah, well, then what are your options, you know? I mean...
I'm working on that, AJ, for myself. If anybody who listens to this program comes up with the answer to your question,
I hope
you will call this program and let me know. What's your idea?
Listen to this idea. Of course, it's flawed. We find an island out in the middle of nowhere, right?
No, but the island is going to sink because of global warming. Never mind.
Yeah, right. So we start breeding politicians, and we don't let them have contact with the outside world, and all they do is govern. But the problem you got there is who's going to be teaching them, you know, corporate America. So
the thing that drives me crazy is I am not anti-politics. I am not anti-politician. What I am anti are the liars and the cheats and the sneaks and the thieves who disguise themselves as politicians, or who somehow have de-evolved into politicians.
Well, how about this, Mike? How about no donations from corporate America? You know?
Yeah, I've been talking about that for, 10 years? Absolutely.
Right, I've heard you talk about that before, but, you know, is that going to pass? Hell no.
No, it never will, but that's about the only way to begin the process of saving the system that these guys handed us off, these white guys handed us off 230 years ago, about the only way to...
Right, we haven't had a real president for over 130 years.
I think FDR was a real president, although he tried to get a little bit funky.
Well,
with,
but he screwed up.
Well, he did.
He screwed up.
Yeah,
and he was a Republican. I like Teddy Roosevelt, but anyway.
Well, Teddy Roosevelt was the kind of Republican that doesn't exist anymore.
I know.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, someday we'll do more, AJ, than just sit around and bitch and cry in our beer. I don't know when that'll happen, but I hope the day will come. Thanks, AJ. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Are we out of time? Oh, time just rips by when you're having fun, right? Hi to Roberta. Hi, Roberta, calling from San Diego, listening to KLSD.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. You know we're out of time.
I know. Well, I'm holding in my hand a copy of On the Beach. My friend just got it for me. You remember that movie with Gregory Peck
and Anthony Perkins?
And
Ava
Gardner.
Yeah.
The war is over. Nobody won. Only the inhabitants of Australia and the men of the new blah, 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 you know. It's like the final chapter of human history is coming to a close.
Remember the last scene in that movie, the banner that said, "There's still time, brother."
I do remember that. I was like 17 sitting there in the theater downtown San Diego watching the
movie. Roberta, I got to go. I'll see you. Thanks. I'll see you all tomorrow night. Take care. Seriously, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.